Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome to Trumpet Radio Live. This is the Thursday edition here on 101.3 KPCG. Lots to talk about on today's program. Headlines, lots of headlines coming out of Charlotte. We'll look at some of the major ones. Also, preview of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show talks a lot about that topic, as well as the Kiva David program. We've got a preview of that coming up. A few other stories as well to get to, and some interesting headlines from around the world. All that and more coming up next on Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3. We are KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Today is Thursday, and I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today as well. It's a lot happening. It's a volatile world out there.
Right. There's so much to say about it. We won't say most of it, though.
No. There's a lot on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, which we'll talk about in a little bit, that really covers what's happening in Charlotte here in the United States of America. Of course, we have listeners all around the world at kpcg.fm. I'm just going to read some of the headlines today. These are from the big websites that are out there. Second night of chaos, violence, appeals for calm, state of emergency, curfew, ? Protester, quote unquote, smashing apartment windows on live TV. NASCAR Hall of Fame looted. I'll leave NASCAR alone. What did they do? I was trying to drive cars. Homeless white man kicked over. Rioters go shoe shopping for size. Rush on stolen cash register. Attempt to throw photographer into fire. Victim's brother calls all white people devils. CNN reporter attacked. Thugs of Charlotte. White man dragged, beaten, begging for mercy. Violence engulfs Charlotte. Riots erupt for second night after leaving four officers hurt. Leaving four officers hurt, man critically injured. So just a good old night in Charlotte, USA.
Yeah, it sounds like the rioters are actually guilty of the worst kind of racism themselves. They're claiming that the police are racist. But listen to those headlines. A guy saying that all white people are devils. I thought something looked different about you when I came in here. You had like an evil hue to your complexion.
That might be a bit of a an overstatement on his part there.
beating a white homeless man up, wow. Dragging one through the streets. That's a lot of black on white racism, which doesn't get publicized nearly as much.
Yeah, it's on display for the world to see. Mm-hmm. You know, they can say whatever they want about it in the media, but we all saw it. We all see it just constantly. So, real bad deal. It's not getting any better. It's just heating up. And so, anyway, there's a lot about that on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. There's, if you can see, of course, the media reports. It's interesting now the way the media is, though, because they have their reporters, but then people are streaming their own. Unlike Facebook and things, people are just streaming their own reports, and some people watch that, to where you don't have a reporter saying anything. You can just watch it, watch what's happening. And so I saw a little bit of that, and as one guy in particular, none of it's funny, but this one guy, he's a protester, and he was, you know, babbling incoherently about something. And then one thing that he said that you could make out was something about tear gas. He's like, I don't care about the tear gas, and I'm cleaning that up for you, fair. But he was bragging about tear gas didn't affect him, and then 30 seconds later he was crying, and he was on the ground. I was like, well, hopefully he learned one lesson at least in this situation, but just a terrible situation. You look at those headlines, and it's what you'd expect. You know, you could almost, once this starts, you could almost have anybody sit down and just write up the headlines for the next day, and they'd be true, because we know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Stealing shoes by size, you know. What does that have to do with anything other than, you know, stealing?
I don't see how that has to do it, with the police shooting. Never mind, by the way, that the policeman in Charlotte was actually black.
Yeah.
They're attacking white people now. That has nothing to do with what they're supposedly protesting.
There's the headlines off of the Drudge Report, the one about the white man dragged, beaten, begging for mercy. There's a video of it because somebody shot the video and they posted it. And, yeah, just a group dragging this white guy through a parking garage. They pull his pants off for some bizarre reason. And he's, you know, begging for mercy. And they beat him up pretty good. And what did he do? He didn't do anything. Justice? Not justice? Stephen Fleury points out on the Trump Daily Radio show, they're not out for justice. They're out for vengeance. Mm-hmm. And that, there's no justice in these actions. Is there justice in robbing a store or looting the NASCAR Hall of Fame?
It's an institution of white supremacy, isn't it? NASCAR.
I don't know. I was the only thing I thought of about that is I was like, man, I wouldn't want to mess with NASCAR fans.
That's right.
You don't want to make them mad. So it's just a bad deal. And it goes on and on and on. And we were talking before I came on the air, and I was just asking you, have you heard anything from the president? Has there been any reports that you've seen? Has he said anything?
No, I was watching Sean Hannity's show last night. He went for hours straight without even having a single commercial break, just covering what was going on in Charlotte. And for a while, he was talking to former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, and he absolutely just blasted the president. If you ever have a chance to look that up, you should, because he really went guns blazing right at the president. He said, what is he doing, sleeping in his bed? Why is he not saying anything about this? Why is he not condemning these kind of attacks? It's because, well, these things are tacitly encouraged right now.
Yeah, I mean, why so much silence? It's interesting. I'm sure something will be said eventually, and we'll see what happens. I just kind of looking at the different media reports today. It's interesting because I think it was CNN and their story, kind of the main point of their story, besides just saying that some of these different things had happened with the riots, was that, I think it said something like a second night of riots continue as people wonder why police haven't released footage of that shooting. And so they're kind of pushing it all back like this is some well thought out response to something. It's wildness. Mm-hmm. It's craziness. But I think the huge miscalculation for everybody, especially, say, leaders of these Black Lives Matter movements, they can't control it either. They're not in control of it. Maybe they get it going, but you're going to control that mob? Who's going to control that mob? I don't think anybody is. And so I think that's the big miscalculation. You know, they start the little fire, but then you can't put it out. What's the end result going to be? does the dawn, burst forth the next day and there's peace and we all learn to get along and help each other as we clean up the ruins of our burned out city? Of course not. It's just building. They're just building a war. And it's a terrible, terrible thing. You'd think people would realize it, but who's going to control it? That's the question. Once you get that started, how do you stop it?
It makes you wonder what the protesters are hoping for, because the only way to control something like this is to put down protesters, isn't it? I mean, is there any other way to stop them when for hours the police are standing there? They occasionally release the tear gas or a flashbang grenade or something like that. But other than that, they're not shooting the protesters, so the protesters don't leave. They know that they're not going to get shot with all the cameras right there.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So we'll see what happens there, but it certainly is not a good situation. And yeah, once you start it, how do you get something like that to stop? They always come out. It always follows the same pattern. Accusations, false reports, false narratives. People start rioting, then they calls for calm. Why don't you call for calm right off the bat?
Because they don't really want it. That's why.
You know what else is funny about this to me, too, is you remember a while ago when John Kerry came out and then he yelled at the media for reporting on terror attacks? Yeah. He said maybe if you didn't report them so much, it wouldn't be such a big deal. Why doesn't he say the same thing about this? Maybe they just shouldn't report police shootings.
Yeah, maybe not.
It's the exact same thing, isn't it? As far as like, well, if you don't report them, it won't be a big deal. I'm not saying either one of those would be right. I'm just saying, you know, on one side, they throw that out. But on the other side, there's silence mm-hmm. when it's something like this. And they can't wait to report on it.
In this case, it actually would make more sense to avoid reporting on these specific things, because there are plenty of white people shot by police. In almost every single case, no matter what the color the person is, the person deserved to get shot, depending on what the person was doing, usually committing a crime or presenting a threat to the police or other people. That is what the police are there to do, is to stop threats. And so if you have what people were calling a book there in Charlotte, and he was pulling out a book. That's not even true. That's a total lie. They just make it up so that they can attack the police, basically.
Well, there's still, yeah, I mean, I've still even heard people talking about that, and I thought that was completely debunked.
The facts came out.
We had a gun.
It was a gun, yeah. And he tried to get it out of his car and shoot police.
It doesn't matter, though. And that's the thing. It just doesn't matter. You watch, somebody will start wearing T-shirts that say, you know, it's a book or, you know, something like that. Even the NBA, I read today, they're in meetings right now about how they're going to protest this year. Well, why don't the fans protest them and just stop going to their games?
Well, if the Thunder does anything like that, I'm not watching. So
that's a terrible.
Yeah,
that's be on note, Thunder. You will lose if you.
And there are a lot of people around here who probably do the same.
Well,
thing.
Yeah,
I'm sure of it.
I think at some point people would say, "Well, that's enough. I'm not gonna pay to watch you put on your protest." So anyway, interesting times, volatile times, and it's just flaring up more and more. So we'll see where it goes from here. We'll talk about the Trumpet Daily Radio Show here in a little bit. That really, really gets into the topic a lot more, and you just need to hear that show today. Here's another story sort of related from Fox News. Flag-stomping teacher has no regrets. He wants students punished. So this happened out there in the Carolinas. It's not too far away from where all this other stuff's going on. It says a teacher who desecrated the American flag, he's a black teacher, inside a North Carolina classroom, told this reporter that he has no regrets and wants the student who photographed him doing it to be punished. Lee Francis, he's a first-year history teacher at Massey Hill Classical High School in Fayetteville, has been placed on administrative leave while the school district investigates the incident. Francis admitted stomping on the American flag Monday during a lesson on the First Amendment. A photo of the incident taken by a student was posted on Facebook and went viral. The teacher said, "Do I regret what I did? Absolutely not. Would I do it again?" He says, "All I can say is I did it and I stand by it." Mr. Francis said he has obtained legal counsel. He says there was some laws broken as far as photos of me taken that violate the county's policies and issues that could be considered defamation of character. So he thinks they defamed his character by taking a picture of him stomping on a flag. He said the student who snapped the photo of the flag desecration broke the law. Oh, now he's concerned about the law, is he? He says, "I believe that child does need to be punished in some way, absolutely." He says, "I can't take pictures of them, and turn they cannot do the same of me." I'm glad the kid took a picture of him, stomping on a flag. What was the lesson there exactly?
I don't know what kind of history he's teaching, but if he's teaching anything about American history, then he would know how special the flag is and what it symbolizes. I believe that actually took place about 12 miles from Fort Bragg military base.
Right.
It's a pretty
the student, the amazing. Student, to his credit, I believe it was him. I'm not sure if it was him or her, but they got up and they took the flag and they left the room. And good for them.
Yeah.
You know, what if the students came in with something that this teacher holds near and dear and stepped on it? Oh, the outrage. He'd be outraged. There's just no purpose to that. Unbelievable. So that's the kind of thing that's going on. But you look at the riots in Charlotte, and you look at a teacher like this, first year teacher, so he's fresh out of college, fresh off the farm, and that's what he's thinking is, which is just anti-America, right? So you can look at those riots and you can see where that thinking's coming from. It's just to tear down America, tear down any institution that is, you know. Traditional military police, whatever.
It's sad to see it happen, and it's happening so fast too. It's just all over the country, pretty much at the same time. High profile figures are getting into the act. Really, it's just everybody who is just trying to overthrow the greatest nation in all of history, basically, and say that the flag represents oppression. That's just the most factless statement ever, basically.
So it's interesting. You asked a question earlier. I think something about what are they thinking as far as what do they hope, you know, comes out of all this. You know, I don't think anyone's thinking beyond getting a free pair of tennis shoes.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone. I don't think anyone has some big thought about it. I think they're just getting stirred up by everything, and Yeah, you know, like you said, those sports stars that are protesting. Again, it's just like the leaders of, say, this Black Lives Matter movement. They're not going to be able to control it once they get it going. And then what? Are they going to? They're responsible, right? They're going to take responsibility for what happens after the fact?
Yeah, it just seems like it's not even focused looting either. So what's stopping these people from going into your nice, wealthy, gated community and trashing your house next? Those are the people who you are supporting right now, and they don't even care who they attack. They don't care if those are businesses run by black people or houses owned by black people. They're trashing everything. So it doesn't matter if you think you're on their side.
Right. Yeah, there is a pretty big divide between the wealthy athlete and the other ones. They don't the athletes don't think there is, but there is. Mm-hmm. And like you said, once that violence breaks out, it doesn't know any bounds. They're just going after everybody and anybody. So it's not a good situation at all. And even when we're at the places where you used to kind of be able to escape a little bit, like a sports contest, now it's in your face there too.
Yeah. And you know their motivation can't possibly be what they're saying, because they claim to be protesting so-called police brutality. They're in Charlotte when the facts come out and they know the police were right. They're still protesting. They didn't pack up and leave and realize that they just destroyed a really beautiful city. They're still doing it.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, maybe some of those well-paid athletes that are protesting could give some money to these businesses that have been looted and pay them back.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a good thing to do. I'm sure they'll get right on that.
Of course.
Give them some of their name brand, their sneakers. Kaepernick doesn't have any sneakers, does he? He doesn't have like a signature shoe.
No, he had a pretty big endorsement from some headphone company.
Okay.
He can give him headphones. Too much else.
He can give him some headphones. There's more going on in the world than just what's going on over there. Iran just paraded its latest weapons and warned the U.S. not to meddle in the Gulf. This is from the Business Insider. This happened yesterday. So while people are over here, and it is a big deal over here, but just kind of fiddling around and burning their cities, other nations are doing stuff like arming to the teeth. Anyone concerned about that? Iran doesn't. They're not too interested in the problems over here, other than it weakens the U.S., which they like.
Fills them with joy.
Yeah. It says Iran marked the anniversary of its 1980 invasion by Iraq. That's weird that you would celebrate that, but by showing off its latest ships and missiles and telling the United States not to meddle in the Gulf. At a parade in Tehran on Wednesday, shown on state TV, the military displayed long-range missiles, tanks, and the Russian-supplied S-300 surface-to-air missile defense system. I wonder where they got the money to buy all that.
Good question.
Where did that come from? A pallet of unmarked bills. I don't know where they got it from exactly, but they probably put a lot of that money the U.S. gave them into this.
Yeah.
It says at the port of Bandar Abbas on the Gulf, the Navy showed off 500 vessels as well as submarines and helicopters at a time of high tension with the United States in the strategic waterway. U.S. officials say there have been more than 30 close encounters between the U.S. and Iranian vessels in the Gulf so far this year, over twice as many as the same period of 2015. Among the weapons displayed was the new long-range Zulfikar ballistic missile, named after a legendary sword said to have been given by Prophet Muhammad to Imam Ali. It has a cluster warhead capable of hitting targets spread over the ground, apparently. A banner on the side of the truck carrying the new missile bore a threat to Iran's arch foe Israel. It says, if the leaders of the Zionist regime make a mistake, then the Islamic Republic will turn Tel Aviv and Haifa to dust. Israel's got, I think, over about 200 nuclear warheads pointed at Iran. So according to some new reports that had come out. At least. So that's a lot of talk there.
See how that goes for them. Luckily for Iran, Israel's not insane like they are.
Right. Yeah, they're not quick to jump out and use those weapons, but Iran would be. The Russian-supplied missile defense system on show in Tehran was deployed last month around Iran's underground uranium enrichment facility at Fordow. So, yeah, they're parading their weapons around, which they do. I mean, that's kind of a yearly thing for them, I guess. And but now they've got some new ones. And it says also on display was the Qadar H missile, which has a range of 2,000 kilometers, according to state TV. Iran's ballistic missile program has been criticized by the West, and the U.S. Treasury imposed sanctions on two Iranian companies in March because of their alleged ties to it. okay. That seems a bit contradictory to what we've been doing as far as giving them money. But so military parade in Iran.
Why are they telling us to stop meddling over there? It seems like if we're their new best friend, they would want our ships side by side with theirs. I don't know. It just seems like we should have bought and paid for their friendship by now through strong diplomacy.
Yeah, what's it going to take? Like, how much do we have to give them before they're our friends?
A limitless amount. There's really no end to
it. Of course, we speak in jest. That's a horrible idea, but it does. It is kind of the way things are going here with foreign policy. A couple of stories here from the "Of course this is happening" segment. And again, with all the serious stuff going on, some of these ridiculous things people waste their time on. Mispronouncing student's name now considered a microaggression. So if you have a student in class, or really this could be anybody, but this in particular is focusing on classes, and you don't know how to pronounce her name correctly or you do it incorrectly, it is a microaggression now.
One of the most pleasant things for anyone to hear is his or her own name. Probably not mispronounced, though, so I could see why that would be a little bit irritating. But to classify it specifically as a microaggression that could trigger a riot on campus, maybe going a little too far there.
They say hundreds of school districts across the country have taken a pledge to, quote, pronounce students' names correctly. Taking a pledge. Is there anybody out there that intentionally mispronounces someone's name? I mean, I don't think that's happening. I think it's because it's just an unfamiliar name and it's a mistake. I don't think there's purposefully doing that. And I don't know how taking a pledge would make it any better. Mm-hmm. You know, I pledge to be smart from here on out. Or, you know, there's certain things you can't really do just by pledging. You know, I pledge to never make an error from here forward. It says, according to this this campaign, it's a national campaign. It's called "My Name, My Identity: A Declaration of Self."
Aw, it's adorable.
A national campaign launched in 2015 by Santa Clara County, California Office of Education, of course known as the SCCOE, and the National Association for Bilingual Education. A teacher who mispronounces a student's name can cause that student anxiety and resentment.
Mm.
They say mispronouncing a student's name truly negates his or her identity, which in turn can hinder academic progress. You know, because there's so many people that would have had just a brilliant career if only their name hadn't been mispronounced in first grade.
If only their path weren't obstructed by these people who are just trying to hold them down.
I've had people mispronounce my name. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
Or not hear it clearly, or, you know, those. It's not fun. I mean, it's, I guess, an irritant to some extent, but it's life, man. It happens.
Sometimes I tease my dad whenever he mispronounces some famous person's name. I'm like, what? I need a translator. I can't even understand what you're talking about.
Well, particularly if it's a name from, and this is why they're doing it, of course, is because there are students that are coming from different cultural backgrounds, different countries. The names are different. They're not. We're not used to it. It's not Bob and Bill. It's something a little different, which is fine, but it does take a while to figure out how to say it, and sometimes it's hard to say, you know, because the languages are different. So again, to make it this big of a deal is just crazy. I think in 2014 a blog called Cult of Pedagogy that's strange. Former teacher Jennifer Gonzalez claimed that, quote, mutilating someone's name is a tiny act of bigotry.
Oof.
Whether you intend to or not, what you're communicating is this: your name is different, foreign, weird. It's not worth my time. I don't think anyone's thinking that.
Some strong words. That's there. It's mutilating very, and bigotry.
It's very aggressive. I was so tempted to mispronounce her name, but it was an easy one. But I don't. Yeah, I don't think anyone's. That's the problem. Do people mispronounce other people's names sometimes? Absolutely. It happens all the time. I do it all the time because I'm trying to read foreign names and I'm not sure how it's pronounced, whether it's a location or a person. But to say that that's, you know, it's being done to attack the person or to what do they say, tell them that they're not worth your time, I don't think anybody's thinking that. I think that's an accusation that's not true.
Yeah, it's a bit extreme, and it just shows that so many people today are just waiting to get offended. They wake up in the morning and it seems like there are 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 different things that could trigger that person. Why exactly does it have to be that way? I couldn't tell you, but that's just how it is now.
This Jennifer Gonzalez, she says this. She says, and before you get all defensive, she's talking to me, I guess.
Sorry.
And before you get all defensive about the bigotry thing, let's be clear. About time. We need some clarity here. She says, discovering that something you do might be construed as bigotry doesn't mean anyone is calling you a bigot. It's just an opportunity to grow. Mm.
But it is bigotry.
I thought she was calling us.
One who commits bigotry is a bigot.
It's just an opportunity to grow. So anyway, you can't do anything these days. Being a teacher, that'd be such a tough job. Teacher, police officer, anything. Any of these jobs that used to be kind of looked at as like, you know, pretty honorable. Now it's like, boy, you can't mispronounce somebody's name or, you know, or be confused about their gender or, you know, when they're purposefully trying to be a different gender. Any of those things or, you know, you're aggressing everybody. So what would they call those riots in Charlotte? Those microaggressions? Macroaggressions?
Definitely macroaggressions.
I think
violent macroaggressions.
Yeah. It's an opportunity to grow, I guess, according to this lady.
But no bigotry, though.
No.
Those poor victims could not possibly be bigots.
Isn't that the craziest thing here? We have two sides of the coin, right? You have just outright wild violence, and people, you know, are trying to look at that like, well, you know, maybe they have a point. And then looking at somebody that mispronounces a name and attacking them like this is the greatest crime of the, you know, of all time. It, up is down, down is up. Makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
Times in which we live. One more story here from the, of course, this happened segment. You remember Kevin Johnson, basketball player from played for Phoenix Suns? Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson hit in face with pie at event, assaults protester. It turned out to be kind of serious, but it's
terrible.
It's not good, but it's kind of funny. Multiple sources have confirmed that Sacramento Mayor, former NBA star and UC Berkeley standout Kevin Johnson, was hit in the face with a pie at a farm-to-table dinner event.
I'm just watching you try to spit that out.
And then he tackled and assaulted the protesters.
He's taking care of business by himself.
He did. He took care of this guy. Excuse me. So sources in attendance have told The Express that during the meal, a protester ran at the mayor and threw a store-bought pie in his face. So you don't see a lot of that anymore. A different witness said that the pie had whipped cream as a topping. So I'm sure they'll have to go to surveillance footage to find out what exactly was in the pie. After this, the protester reportedly said something to Johnson that prompted the mayor to allegedly tackle the protester and punch him in the face repeatedly, more than half a dozen times. You don't mess with Kevin Johnson. That's a former NBA star there. He's not a small man.
He'll easily outrun you, and then he'll hold you down when he gets you, too.
He took care of it. Says one witness described it as a bloody pulp after he hit him. After witnesses say that the pie thrower was hit multiple times in the face, he will definitely need stitches. Thompson was at one time an activist. So this guy was an activist with the Occupy Sacramento movement. The pie thrower actually engaged Mayor Johnson in the past during city council meetings. So they've got a bit of a history. In 2011, Thompson spoke at council and turned his back on Johnson. Tensions were apparently high at this meeting, and three SPD officers moved toward the pie thrower, but Johnson waved them off. So he wanted to finally get a... He's like, you want a piece of the pie, I'll give you the whole thing.
It seems like one punch for every offense ever committed against the mayor over the years.
Yeah.
It seems like they keep having these run-ins.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, because they're both breaking the law, so yeah. I don't know what they're going to do about it. But in any event, there's just so many things here. You got a guy, you got a protester from the Occupy Sacramento movement. He throws a pie in the face of the mayor at a farm-to-table dinner event.
And it wasn't even a homemade pie. It was a store-bought pie.
Farm to table. It should have been homemade. They should have called it store to face. Terrible situation. Bad deal there in Sacramento. But it's hard to not laugh. You know, for any of the people that are on the news and they have to read this over in the Sacramento area, I hope they can get through it without a little chuckle, because it really isn't funny, but it's just the idea of somebody hitting somebody in the face with a pie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the premise of, like, a lot of comedy movies over the years, right?
That's exactly what I thought of. I thought of something like Curly, Larry, and Moe, the Three Stooges.
So, I don't know. They showed a picture of the guy that took the punches, and after they cleaned him up, I mean, he's got a bit of a gash on him. So, but anyway, maybe he learned his lesson.
Hopefully the mayor doesn't lose his job over it. Seems like it was a long time coming.
Yeah, I don't know. They'll have to figure out what to do there. It's not a good situation any which way.
But, it was probably a happy day for the mayor, even if he does get fired. He's like, finally, I got that guy back.
Finally,
after all these years.
I can go after the pie thrower.
He finally gave me a reason.
Yeah. Really, really bizarre story there. The Key of David program is coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Make sure you listen for that. Also, you can find the videos online at thetrumpet.com. And I'll say we've got a one that's new that'll be coming out here in not this weekend, but next weekend. And Key of David presenter Gerald Fleury talks about just some of the terrorist attacks that we've seen here in the U.S. over the last weekend, and these riots as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really good program. Gets to the heart and core of what the problem there is and how to solve it. And so that'll be coming out, just to whet your appetite. That'll be coming out here, not this weekend, but the following. So a lot of important information there that'll be coming out pretty soon. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, today. This is the title of the program. Black victim, black officer, black police chief, black rioters, white devils. Because that's what's happening.
That's powerful. That's a great title.
It's a very good title. And he talks about it. He goes through some of the history of both the officer and the man shot. A little bit of a character sketch there. And, you know, just talks about the riots that are happening. And like he mentions, they're not after justice. They're after vengeance. But it's not going to work out well. It hasn't worked out well so far. The fruits are bad. There's nothing positive that's come out of this for anybody.
Right. Yeah, and it is like some of these protesters are seeking segregation again. A lot of these people, and even on campuses, they've tried to segregate certain students into certain dorms. And it's something we fought over not too long ago to desegregate society. Now it's like 50 years later, we're asking for segregation again. And then as soon as they start having problems, maybe then they'll say, well, the white man let us segregate ourselves, so it's their fault still. There's just a huge victim mentality here where at some point you have to actually take responsibility for yourself.
Well, it's some really bad things are coming to light. The part of the title here about the white devils, that's, of course, from a video. I think it was the man who got shot. I think it was his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that. He said the police officers are devils, the white police. And then he said all whites are devils. And if you look at the some of the comments to that video, because it was posted on social media, some people support that. They were saying, oh, he finally said it. The idea being that's what people think. But at least somebody finally said it. So the thing that's interesting, too, even with the if you look on, say, the Drudge Report today, and they have that video of that white guy being attacked, isn't this supposed to be a protest against police brutality? That white guy wasn't an officer that I know of. He's just a white person. So, again, what's going on here? I think everybody knows, but people don't want to say it.
Yeah, and those protesters also didn't attack the police station. They attacked other random buildings, or looted those other random buildings. So what is really going on here? It's clearly not targeted just at police.
Yeah. And people aren't dumb. I mean, people have a sense of, you know, some of the things that are happening. So make sure you listen for this Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Very important program today, and it's the times in which we live. You gotta listen for that. It's one of the great benefits of having a daily program is that things happen on a daily basis, and they can be talked about. You've got a really interesting story for us here, breaking away from all that drama. This is from The Guardian, and it says, does quitting social media make you happier? Young people say yes, some of them that are doing it.
Right. Some of these people here who responded to this Guardian question said that leaving Facebook, leaving Twitter, leaving Instagram, these other social media platforms actually improved their lives. Daisy, 23 years old from Manchester, England, said, after a romance ended with a guy I really liked, I kept trying to avoid Facebook so I wouldn't have to see him. It was after this that I gradually switched off from it, but before that I'd been wanting to quit for a while, so she finally had a viable reason to leave. Facebook made me feel anxious, depressed, and like a failure. when I went online, it seemed like everyone was in Australia or Thailand. And if they weren't traveling, they were getting engaged or landing great jobs. I felt like everyone was living the dream, and I was still at home with my parents with debt from my student loan hanging over me.
Yeah, there's been a lot of reports about social media and that how it is, again, sort of a bragging contest.
Yeah.
And people trying to put forward their best, most exciting things. And sometimes people are doing some pretty neat things, but there's been stories of people that they had this great online presence in terms of the way people would perceive their lives, and they were miserable and had some really actually bad things going on. But, you know, who presents that?
Right.
No, people want to present their best self. And I don't know. I mean, there's benefits to those things, but like Facebook is just kind of like brag book, isn't it?
Kind of is. Yeah. It seems like this girl went on to say that she felt like she felt obligated to tag herself at the different restaurants and places she visited. But the thing was, every time she saw a person face to face, she couldn't really say what's been going on, because all the person would ever say was, yeah, I saw that on Facebook. So there wasn't really much to talk about. There wasn't a way to really reintroduce. So what's the point of seeing people face to face if it's all old conversation that you've already had through Facebook, basically?
This is a really funny commercial that AT&T did about the internet going out. And there's been a shorter version on TV, and then somebody showed me the longer version yesterday. It's about a 2 or 3 minute clip. And it just shows this family and when the internet goes out. And now it's exaggerated, but not that much.
Not really.
Like, there's this one scene where the husband and wife are just kind of sitting there, and they're trying to have a conversation. And like, well, how's it going? You know, pretty good. And they're like, yeah, this is nice, isn't it? And then, but clearly they're uncomfortable. And then they open up the laptop again, like, just in case it comes back on, we'll just leave it right. And it did, in a way, I don't know if they meant to do it this way. I think they were just trying to promote that the internet is there and you don't need to worry about it. But I think it does highlight the fact that people don't quite know how to interact with each other as much as they used to, because so much interaction is through, some sort of social media.
Yeah, that's right. And there's almost like a desperate grasp for approval from the people around you on these platforms. This girl even said that if she didn't get 5 likes at least for a post, she would just delete it, because she said, oh, well, no one cares about what I did. So really my experience wasn't worth having, and this post isn't worth existing anymore. So she'd just take it down.
Yeah, that's really bizarre. It's like this unknown mass of people has to validate whether what you're doing is important or not. You know, and there are people out there that are just kind of famous because they're on Facebook or these other social medias. You know, they don't really do anything that I'm aware of, other than you see them pop up in the headlines because they did something on social media.
Yeah.
And, you know, took a picture of themselves or something. And that's enough these days, I guess, if you're popular enough. So they got to keep their name and their brand out there. But really, it seems like a pretty shallow existence.
Yeah. For some people, the most trivial post online can be a huge news. And I don't know if maybe we take an example from that and try to put things out there as well and think that maybe people will care that much. But really, unless you're extremely famous, most people are not going to be super excited about all these tiny updates. I always felt like when I used to have Twitter, I would always try to just check it. I felt obligated to check it a lot and keep up with what was going on with people. And it was just not really that good of a use of time, I didn't think.
Yeah, it is definitely a time consumer, and so. But like these people responding to this Guardian question, they do feel like their lives have improved. They actually maybe living a little bit now.
Right, Ben, who is 21 years old, he said, "I made a New Year resolution to cut down on my social media use. After doing this, I started to ask, why am I using it at all? That's why I've quit various platforms over the past year: Snapchat in November and Facebook in June. I've never really had WhatsApp or Twitter. I mainly used Facebook at university for organizing events and meetups, but I've gradually started to realize how pervasive it is. I also feel uncomfortable with the amount of time I used to spend on it. I've always found social media to be an environment in which people constantly seek attention and validation through one-upping people's comments and boasting over likes and retweets. So it's not just putting something out there to get approval from other people, but if people other people online are getting more approval than you, you have to say something even more awesome to upstage those people. And then you have to boast about how popular your certain posts are. Say, look at this. I got 25 retweets on this tweet here.
Yeah. Yeah. That is very, very much true. I wonder if you could become very successful doing that if you became like the antithesis of the braggers. Like you just always went on and said, there's nothing going on. I'm not going to do anything today. Like, I wonder if people would kind of, like the underdog, you know, start following you. Like, I like this guy. You know, he makes me feel good because there's nothing going on with him. And no matter.
Start cheering him on, hoping he finally does something interesting with his life.
Build people up. Like, I might do something tomorrow. Next day, nah.
Still didn't do anything. Didn't even leave the house.
And make other people feel better about themselves.
That's right. Ben went on to say, we've not needed social media for thousands of years, and now people think your life is over if you don't have it. So he probably was hearing from people, well, how do you exist without social media? Really, it's not that hard, but a lot of people, when they've been plugged into it and intertwined for so long, it seems like you can't really get on with your daily life without it.
There's a show that kind of a comedy show, I guess, and they did a little bit of a spoof on this sort of idea. They went in and they declared social media bankruptcy. Like, was an actual thing you could go do, and they're like, you sure you want to do this? And they deleted like their presence from the online world.
That's
and they're
great.
Like, there's no going back. You know. So you know, people do take it very seriously to some extent, or feel like they really do need it. But you know, there is of course there's always, I suppose, some value if it's used the right way. We use it for certain things here. You know, we have a Twitter at KPCGFM and that type of thing. And there's some value to it, or getting programs online. But there's a lot of bad there as well, or just useless information. But then you see some really, really bad things, like what we've seen in Charlotte, where really people are going off of somebody's social media post, which was not accurate at all, mm-hmm. which is just a flat-out lie. And people just start running and going crazy, and then everyone knows what's happening, and it draws more people to it. And you see things like that happen, too.
Right. I believe Pat McCrory, I think he's the governor of North Carolina, last night was saying that even social media was used to bring people to the protesting, including professional protesters, people
who
aren't even, you know, involved in the situation. We know that's happened before. It's yet to be confirmed for sure if that's happened in Charlotte yet or these other places where it's happened recently. But yeah, people getting on Twitter and saying, you know, we're going to protest at this time, at this place, and people from across the country actually traveling in to join the protests. So that just shows you some of the destructive power of social media.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't use it much other than maybe some work-related things and, you know, of course, the internet, checking various things from time to time. But it does eat up your time. And whether it's that or television, I guess for the younger generation, it's more of the social media type stuff. But yeah, it's interesting. Be an interesting experiment. Just take a week, take a day, see if you what happens if you don't do it. See if you still exist.
Right.
If you disappear.
Yeah, I've gone a step further before and just gotten rid of all of my screens for a week or a month, and that really is refreshing. Getting off social media is definitely a good step as well, just to realize that some of these things we think are necessities really aren't, and there are actually a lot of things that we can do. I finished a book in 2 days recently because I dropped my phone in water and had it in a bag of rice to try and dry it out. And while I didn't have my phone, I finished a book in 2 days. That never happens. I haven't done that in like 5 years.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, without my phone for 2 days, I was able to do that.
Well, it is pretty amazing. You know, I think probably one of the big obstacles people see in their lives, they don't feel like they have enough time. You know, I just don't have enough time to do everything. And that can be true, but it is interesting if you stop and look at where the time goes.
Yeah.
How much time goes to social media or just checking your phone or just, because you know what's so interesting? I had this happen to me last night. I was actually reading a book and, but you know, I was probably 10 minutes into reading and then I had that impulse to like, I should check the headlines or I should check something, you know? And then it's so hard to resist that. And it's so hard to stay concentrated on one thing for, you know, more than a couple of minutes because that impulse is there. And I think we just get used to it. And you think, oh, I should check and see. I don't even know what I'm really checking for, just general what's going on,
mm-hmm.
which isn't always a bad thing. But it can really just interrupt thinking about something or reading something or really focusing on something for a while.
Yeah, I've done that before too, where I get this impulse to check and I go ahead and I check with all urgency, knowing that whatever I was going to check was really important. And in 5 seconds, I forget even why I pulled my phone out to check something, right, whatever it was. And so now I actually just put all my screens across the house from me if I'm doing something important, because then I don't really have too much of an impulse to do it because the screen's not right next to me.
Did it work, by the way, drying your phone out by putting it in a bag of rice?
It actually did. The only thing, okay, it's actually a kind of weird story. It fell off the top of the shower ledge. I was trying to listen to KPCG while I was in the shower. Uh-huh. It fell off. I caught it against my leg, which was wet. Uh-huh. So it like garbled up the sound. And when I put it in the rice, it actually did fix the sound completely.
Wow.
So I don't know if the phone had actually been killed from it, if it would have come back, but it definitely fixed the problem that I had.
And then you ate the rice?
Not yet. Oh, okay. At least not that I know of. Maybe my wife fed it to me since.
I didn't know that would be a way to do it, but that's a way to do things, dry things out with rice, huh? Because it absorbs the water.
Apparently that works. Huh. So I didn't really know that either. I think I've heard about it before, but
is that what they're doing at the Apple store? If you bring in your phone and then you dropped it and they're like,
Probably,
we need to go back and, you know, just roll it in rice for a while, bring it back out to you. And give you an order of sushi, so it's pretty interesting. So, do they have any conclusions at the end of their write-up here in the Telegraph about getting off of social media?
Basically, it just is a bunch of responses from readers. It doesn't really say much from the article's point of view or the writer's point of view, but it just does have a lot of great quotes in here about how it helped them a lot. This Ben said, I'm more productive and less concerned with what other people think about me. Now, the only person I have to regularly compare myself with is me. I'm in a much more positive mindset without social media than I ever was with it. It's let me see who my friends truly are and who I was only concerned with simply because they were there on social media. I now use a basic smartphone and email as my only forms of communication, and people have adjusted to it. So that's basically the conclusion that a lot of these people who responded have drawn, that they don't need social media. They don't need to be constantly plugged in. They don't need even the most advanced phone either, because it does tear them away from a lot of more productive things.
Well, and that's a really good point that he made, that he was in a better mind frame. I think sometimes maybe we don't realize how much social media or, you know, things we look at on the internet or listen to can affect us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get pretty negative after looking at some different things. So it's really interesting to see what some of the people had to say about that. It's something you have to be disciplined enough to try it.
Yeah.
And see what the results are.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily saying everyone has to get off of all social media, but it is nice to limit it at least, or get off of it from time to time, just to reestablish the fact that you're not dependent on it.
Yeah, you can compare and contrast how you feel with and without it. So it's pretty interesting. One more story here today. This one is talked about on our news update a little bit. Bible breakthrough. Scientists unlock secrets of burned Hebrew scroll. Pretty neat story. In a significant archaeological achievement, an ancient Hebrew scroll that was burned in a fire in the distant past and was seemingly impenetrable has finally become readable, and scientists have discovered that it contains verses from the book of Leviticus. The breakthrough was made through a high-tech process called virtual unwrapping. It sounds like something if you got like a present emailed to you, virtually unwrap it. And involved a collaboration between experts in the United States and Israel. See, we can work together.
Yeah.
While no one is sure of the precise age of the parchment referred to as the En-Gedi scroll, radiocarbon dating suggests it is from about the 3rd or 4th century. It was discovered in 1970. It likely was burned in a fire that destroyed a synagogue in the year 600 AD, they say. We're reading a real scroll. It hasn't been read for millennia. Many thought it was probably impossible to read. Brent Seals, a professor in the computer science department at the University of Kentucky, said. It is interesting to think about that. Like, who else read that over time, you know, historically? Yeah. Who held that in their hands and read that?
Right. Well, in Gedi, I believe that's the location of one of the caves where David hid from King Saul. So if that's actually where the scroll was found, who knows?
It'd be awesome. You know, and it's interesting too, because whenever they find some of these things relating to the Bible, it always has, you know, stuff that's in the Bible already. You know, I think people kind of are hoping for like the magical, you know, the book no one's ever seen type of thing. But but usually it's the scriptures that are ones that we're familiar with from the Bible that we have today. But it is just fascinating to see how accurate it is from that long ago till today. I know there's translations, obviously, between Hebrew and English and such, but you know, it's they did a great job of keeping all that information.
Yeah, I think there's that. Isn't that book called the Apocrypha, which has other
books? I think so.
Apparently, the people who put the Bible together somehow knew that the Apocrypha wasn't quite on the Bible's level, and they didn't include it in there. So there are some other writings that are pretty interesting, like the books of the Maccabees when they rebelled against Rome. But the Bible obviously is divinely inspired, and the order of it and everything in it is inspired. Doesn't mean there can't be more, but a lot of the key findings usually have Bible verses.
Yeah, it's really, really pretty neat to find something that old. And like we were saying, think about who maybe was involved with it over the years. Michael Siegel, a professor at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and co-author on the study, said that he and a colleague, Emmanuel Tov, analyzed the scroll after the team in Kentucky made it readable. They said, "We were amazed at the quality of the images. They first thought that it might contain all the books of the Torah, but later realized it was part of Leviticus." He added, "I think we can safely say that since the completion of the publication of the corpus of Dead Sea Scrolls about a decade ago under the editorship of Emmanuel Tov, the En Gedi Leviticus scroll is the most extensive and significant biblical text from antiquity that has come to light." So there have been some pretty neat discoveries lately that either are directly from the Bible like this or do prove the Bible to be correct and accurate. David and others, other discoveries. And so it's always nice to have archaeology match up with the Bible. It just proves it correct.
Right. It definitely does strengthen faith. And there are a lot of interesting stories that we can imagine or try to look more deeply into based on where the thing was found or what exactly it was. And it's pretty interesting even that we have a dig associated with Herbert W. Armstrong College here over there in Jerusalem. And we're digging up a lot of really interesting artifacts that do prove the Bible true.
This right up here is at Fox News if you want to see the rest of it. And they've got a picture of the scroll, Bible Breakthrough Scientists Unlock Secrets of Burned Hebrew Scroll. And it's a small, they have a penny there to give you perspective. And wow. It's not that much bigger. It's probably a little over the size of, I guess, a dollar bill, roughly. I mean, if the penny there is accurate, which I think is why they put it there. So pretty interesting. You can see a picture of that, and that's at foxnews.com. So that's a good report, even though there are plenty of not great ones going on today. Make sure that you do listen for the Key of David program. It's coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. And also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, really getting into what's going on in Charlotte. A lot of good details there. The title of today's program, Black Victim, Black Officer, Black Police Chief, Black Rioters, White Devils. So
that's a logical conclusion, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. it's a really important program. Make sure you listen for that. Also, there's a new The Sun Also Rises with your host, Jeremiah Jacques, and he talks about the attributes of grit, being gritty in a good way, not in the sense of like, you know, you need a shower.
So gritty enough to possibly withstand someone mispronouncing your name
yeah.
and to still be a success in life despite such devastating setbacks.
Yeah. You got to have a little bit of that, that grit to you, I guess. So that's, one of the other shows that's, here today. And also if you missed, the Trumpet Hour program, make sure that you get the archives there at kpcg.fm. There'll be a replay of that today as well. And, that gets into a lot of the things going on. The Trumpet Hour Week in Review is Friday, and, it'll be interesting to see what the headlines are this week. I'm sure a lot will be in there about what's happening over on the East Coast, because that's just big news.
Yeah, that's going to be a can't-miss program with all that's happened here this week. Also overseas with Iran still bullying us somehow. Somehow, some way, they're figuring out how they can bully the greatest nation in the world.
Yeah, so make sure you listen for those programs. You can find the schedule online at kpcg.fm along with the archives of the programs. In case you can't catch them during the week, you can always go back and listen to them on the weekend or whenever you get a chance to do that. That'll do it for us on Trumpet Radio Live today. Thanks for joining us here on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. That'll do it for our segment. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, thanks for being with us today. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. You can download Trumpet Radio live segments from kpcg.fm.